extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire. From the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Charlie Davies, David Goss. Glory, glory. 6-1 win against Martinique in the Gold Cup for the U.S. Men's National Team. We're here to do the live reaction. And if you're listening via podcast, well, you've got a treat because we got MLS coming your way at the back end as well. Joseph Martinez, Gabriel Heinze, not that happy with each other. That's the big news in MLS today. The big news in CONCACAF is that both Canada and the U.S. are through. And Canada in first in Group B on goal differential. 6-1 for the U.S. against Martinique, overmatched. You had the tongue from Daryl Dike. You had the CONCACAF hat trick, which is two goals, but we thought it was three, then it was two, then it was three again. Canada handled their business, have goal differential. Let's do the same thing we did after that Haiti win. And we'll start with you, Doyle. One-word review for this U.S. men's national team win. And what does it mean, big picture?
Muted.
And he's
What an MVP performance.
Taquito muted you.
Taquito said, well, until we figure that out, Charlie, you've got the floor, man. One word review.
All right.
Doyle's speechless. That's his one word review was speechless.
I read his lips. He said, fantastic.
Did he? That doesn't seem like that. What's another F word that would describe this? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not good at lip reading. I'm bad. Yeah.
Go ahead, guys.
My one word is fun. It's Martinique. It shouldn't mean everything. We're not going to take everything from it. But sometimes soccer can be fun. It hasn't been for the U.S. men's national team for a really long time. We've beaten teams like Martinique in the group stage. Over the last few years, we haven't done it like this with the attack, with the numbers in the attack, the way the goals were scored. So, yeah, that's my one word.
I had exuberant because I feel the exact same way. And we were talking about on Spaces before, Dave. It was like this no pressure situation for the U.S. You know, like they're going to win this game. We know they're going to win this game. They're going to be in the knockout stage of this Gold Cup. We know that. Are they going to win? We already said it doesn't matter that much. So I had exuberant, sort of this like youthful energy, growth. It may not be sort of fully mature and at the very end stage of its lifespan here, and we know that this U.S. national team is not. In fact, we know that this is not really the first team, though there will be some that will be picked and plucked by Greg Berhalter in September for World Cup qualifying. But there is growth, there is fun, there is energy, there is excitement in having our B team go out and put this result on, and having, you know, guys from that team who might have been nothing on the international stage a year ago, Daryl Dike, for instance, be this player that everyone's clamoring for now to say, put him in the starting lineup. You know, go play him in the biggest games that this nation has. I mean, that is exuberance. That is fun. That is Matt Doyle, and I wonder if he's back and unmuted.
I've refreshed. Can you guys hear me?
That's the way it works. If it's not working, just refresh.
MLSsoccer.com.
I didn't even know that's what you sounded like. I don't think I've ever actually heard you before.
I'm just, it's facial expressions. That's all it is on this podcast. On a podcast.
Give me one word.
Encouraging. And it's not because everybody on the field was perfect. I thought there was definitely some stuff to pick apart, but this was a very young, very inexperienced lineup. And not only were there a lot of good individual performances, but I thought they actually executed on the principles of play that Greg Berhalter has tried to instill. And the reason he has tried to instill, you know, the idea of positional play is so that teams that bunker really struggle to contain the U.S. attack. And like the whole idea of disorganizing teams with the ball is that in CONCACAF, you're going to face a lot of teams that sit back and don't let themselves get disorganized without the ball. So you're going to have to be creative. You're going to have to be a little bit clever. And I thought this team was creative and clever, with the big old caveat being that it was Martinique. You know, this was a much lower level test than Haiti in the first game.
Yeah, I'm going to go with confident. And it's an expected win. This, like you said, it's Martinique. It's and they aren't organized. They might try and park the bus, but it's still not really parking the bus because they're out of position. They dive in. They come out and trying to engage you when they shouldn't. So with that being said, though, I don't want to take away from James Sands. I thought in the playing in the middle of a back three, that's where he thrives. He has cover with Zimmerman and Robinson. So the lack of athleticism and pace at times, you're not going to see that when he can basically hide in between those two defensively. And when he is on the ball, he made the right decision passing wise on the first goal. Instead of overlooking Williamson as he checked for the ball, because both other center backs did, and whether it was side to side playing the safe ball or playing in behind long, James Sands said, "I trust you. I'm gonna ping it, zip it right to your feet." Williamson turns and sprays it wide to Bello, and that's how the first goal was created. I liked the way he played. He made the game from the back, playing in the middle of the back three. I do like what Busio did, dropping in, getting on the ball, showing the confidence, not showing that he's ready for the next step, that he's ready for more opportunities. So I'm excited about his progress. Eric Williamson, too, again, we all knew what he was going to do. He's confident on the ball. He can dribble. He can turn his midfielders. He's good at 1v1 facing, as he created a good chance off a set piece, but Busio just missed. But sometimes a little lackadaisical because he does have the skills, and Martinique isn't Brazil. So you could get a sense throughout the game that players did take their foot off the gas. But
they're the Brazil of the French overseas colonies.
Ooh.
That's what they've
no,
always been.
No,
yeah, you're right.
I think Haiti gets that title.
Well, not a cop. Whoa, dude.
Whoa.
Talking about
whoa.
A free republic, right?
Time out. Time out.
Yeah. Woo. Come on, Charlie. We got to go back into history class on this.
How many Haitians on that team play in France?
But they're not an overseas
but they're
department.
Not a colony. They're not a colony.
Department is the term they like.
Political science lesson shall come at a later date. Let's talk Daryl DK before we get into anything else. We have the midfield. We have the formation that we saw, a little bit 3-4-3. From Greg Berhalter. We have Matthew Hoppe's first impressions. We have James Sands, as you said, Charlie. He looked really nice in this one. And then we'll look ahead to Canada as well, because he had a nice performance. Maybe gamed it a little bit. Had a strategic yellow card to make sure that they were ready for the knockout rounds. But let's get to Daryl DK. One goal, two goals, maybe three goals. Depends on your point of view. My point of view is that was an own goal, an incredible rainbow that Daryl DK didn't put on frame. But given everything that happened, it was absolutely wild. This is one of those games where you get the post-game Twitter calls, and they're probably justified in a lot of ways to say Daryl DK should be our starting striker. Charlie, what did he show you in this game? Has your opinion changed? Should he be that player for Greg Berhalter in September?
My opinion remains the same. He is the best striker currently for the number 9 position with the A-team. Just because you can see his growth and development, he gets better with each performance. He's getting more confidence. He's getting used to the speed of play. He's a player who's now, I think, really good with his runs out of midfield, towing the line, bending his runs. This goal where he just takes it by himself, beast mode activated, and the little lift over the defender as he dives in, and then another little lob over the keeper. That was special. That was a nice goal.
Because he understands aesthetics, and then, of course, the celebration. You've got to brand yourself a little bit on the celebration. Daryl understands these things. He knows how to work his way into your heart. And he has done so. He is David Goss's spirit animal.
Yeah.
How did you feel on this night?
It was awesome. Now, I think that the question shouldn't be, should he start in September? I think the conversation should be, should he start against Canada, and should he be starting throughout this tournament?
Oh, gosh, come on.
Charlie, that's fine, but I think it's okay to say, Greg, you want to see more? Fine. If you want to see more, then you have to continue to give him the opportunities, especially when he scores. And I'm okay with hearing people around the U.S. camp or fans say, Jesse Zardes is an experienced player. I want him in a big game. That's okay. Zardes has something that DK can't have because he's 10 years older than him and has done it. No one else in the pool has that, and no one else in the pool has proven themselves with the U.S. men's national team as Daryl has in the three games that he's played. So my point is, I think he has to get the opportunity against Canada because that's why we're here. We're not here to win the Gold Cup. We are here to find out who can help us in World Cup qualifying. And I think outside of what Zardes has done, which is unique because he is the lone veteran in that pool, unless you bring Josie back in, which you have to talk to Bill Manning about that because that's a whole nother conversation. unless you're going to do that, that's where I think Daryl stands out. But it's awesome to watch him play. You watch that goal where he chips it over and you talk about the tongue and everything. His strength allows him to be so calm. He slows himself down in the game just to make his decision, to take his touch. And it looks so easy for him. And what's shocking is how little he's played professional soccer and how young he is. Like, he looks like
what's made his professional debut.
Yeah.
This time 12 months ago.
He looks like at times Zlatan looked like when he was comfortable in MLS, where you're like, this guy has played here. He has moments like that where you're like, he looks like he's controlling how everyone else is moving around him. Charlie's upset that I brought up Zlatan. Yeah. I didn't mean to. I was just bringing up.
I know you have, guys. I know you're feeling him yourself, but don't be throwing
I'm not. I promise.
That's a different kind of spirit animal. Oof. All right. What did you make of the formation, Doyle? Because we debated in the spaces, and I think maybe we got it wrong. We'll just say it that way. We thought it would be a 3-5-2, and it wasn't.
I thought it would be a 3-5-2 because I didn't think Matthew Hoppe could play in the half spaces. But he mostly did tonight, so it was more of a 3-4-2-1, which we've seen a lot from Berhalter, right? I think the first time we saw it was about 2 years ago in that Jamaica game before the Gold Cup. We've seen it as recently as the Mexico game to finish the Nations League. So it's like his second preferred formation. He still would rather play the 4-3-3 most times, but he went with the 3-4-2-1 in this one. I mean, it looked good. I think Matthew Hoppe, I don't think he is suited to playing in between the lines, but that's fine because he just ran around all night and found space all over the field, whether it was, in the box or out wide left or, causing an overload on the right with Shaq Moore. So having his energy and Christian Roldan's energy in that line underneath DK, I think it worked a lot. And of course, having a midfield on back line, especially that could create so much useful possession. It worked fine. It was against Martinique. It was going to be good no matter what formation.
How about this? Jackie D wants to know, do we keep this formation? Does he go forward with it?
We've had this formation for 2 years. It's definitely one of the clubs in the bag. I would say right now, with the way Sands is playing, you probably want to keep him on the field. And that probably means we're going to go with the 3-4-2-1 or the 3-4-3. But I would have no problem going into the next game and seeing a 4-3-3 with Sands as the number six. There's still a lot more stuff that I want to see Greg Berhalter try. And as we've kind of hammered home on this show and the previous show and every show we've done talking about the Gold Cup, this is less about winning the trophy than it is about discovering who can play, who can contribute for World Cup qualifying and in what spots.
And you kind of get an early treat, even though you'd want to be in a situation where you, for the U.S., you can draw to go through. It's a must-win game. Like, you get to put these players in a situation where they show how can they prove themselves against a team that will be in the final round of World Cup qualifying in a must-win game.
In the first round of World Cup qualifying, by the way. There's no waiting on it. This is not a full-strength Canada side. We know that. No Jonathan David, no Alphonso Davies. But this is certainly not a full-strength U.S. squad either. It's not even close to it, but this is an experience.
Also, based off this injury, Alphonso Davies may not be available for that window.
We did talk about that on the last show. We kind of acted like it wasn't a big deal. It does sound like it's about 4 to 6 weeks. He would be coming back a couple weeks before the World Cup qualifying window, so we'll see about that for them. How about this one from Tyler Connors, Dave? Who impressed more for you, Eric Williamson or Gianluca Busio?
I mean, I'm an easy E guy, and I'm always excited to see him play. He takes guys on. No one else in this entire team does that, and he's able to change the way that defensive shape is. He looked comfortable. He obviously hit that ball over the top for the first goal. So I was really impressed by Williamson, and it was just him taking what he does with the Portland Timbers into this game. But he stood out for me as one of the guys who took control of the pace of the play. And Greg talked about it before the game, and the broadcast talked about it a ton during the game of like keeping the tempo high and trying to keep the game moving. And I thought Williamson stepped into that really well.
I mean, he's the guy that drops the shoulder. Right, he's the guy that finds that little between space and makes
although Busio had a half turn under pressure in the last 10 minutes that blew the Martinique line away.
72nd minute.
Yeah. But my guy Williamson was doing it from minute one. So, Charlie, catch up. That's 71 minutes earlier.
How many of these guys stick in the midfield going forward? Like, you're going into Canada, Busio, Williamson, maybe Roldan. I mean, he's not getting the credit he probably deserves for this performance, so it was a little quieter. He's not on the ball as much.
I think,
who has a chance to stick?
I think from this team, and again, it's a bit weird because the Gold Cup doesn't just mean how do you win the whole thing. I would see Vines come back into the team with the same setup, and then the other big one would be Legette instead of Roldan. And I think Roldan's kind of stuck right now because he does a lot of things well that Legette also does well. And Legette's cleaner on the ball. He's obviously a guy that Greg Berhalter values extremely highly. And he has even more quality maybe in front of goal. So I think those would be the two that I would expect. And otherwise, I would leave it all the same. That doesn't mean he will, though.
Acosta's going to be starting the game against Canada. It's a must-win game, right? Like, Acosta is going to be starting in central midfield. Now, whether it's part of a 4-3-3 or the 3-4-2-1, I don't know. I expect, though, that he will be starting. Of the two, I mean, I would take him over him and Williamson over Busio. I thought if you grade on a curve, what Busio did as a 19-year-old was more impressive than what Williamson did as a 24-year-old. But what Williamson did was still just better. Busio had gotten to 10 duels. He only won one of them. He was ragdolled repeatedly anytime there was a physical moment in that game. He was sloppy on the ball. There were a couple of really bad giveaways. There were a couple of times he got beat, and he just stayed beat. And you can't have that as a number six in a must-win game against a good team, which is what Canada pretty much are these days. So, I mean, it's promising, and it would not shock me at all, given how much he's improved over the past 2 months, if he just keeps improving, and we're talking about him very seriously for the September or October qualifiers. But if you have a must-win game this weekend, I still think Busio is behind Williamson and Acosta.
And you think Acosta is the one who sits a little deeper? In that
I mean, tonight it was Williamson who was sitting deeper. And, you know, they both dropped deep, but like Williamson was getting on the ball a little bit more. I actually like him there because the shoulder dip, man. If he makes the first defender miss, then that compromises the shape of the entire rest of the midfield. Somebody else has to step to him, and then you're starting rotations. And once they start scrambling just a little bit, then gaps open up, and the U.S. have been really good about finding and playing to those gaps and getting it onto the feet of attackers. So I actually like Williamson a little bit deeper. I like him better deeper. The issue is sometimes he's like he thinks he's like Xavi or something, and he'll just try to dribble three guys in his own defensive third, and like it's a really bad giveaway, and I don't want to see that, but like you kind of have to. Kind of have to live with it with a player like that from time to time.
Charlie, I want your thoughts on Matthew Hoppe. It was a little bit, yeah. It was a little bit raw at times,
mm-hmm.
But when he executed his vision, I mean, there's like that cross is going like 300 miles per hour, banging off DK's head. I mean, he dominated some people physically. He got himself in good spots. He may be a little bit of a tweener when, as you said, Doyle was positionally. Is he in between the lines? Probably not.
No.
Does he fit? Probably not. But what kind of role can he play for this team and maybe even beyond?
Well, he's another attacking threat. What I liked about Matthew Hoppe is he's sure of himself. He's sure of his touches. He's confident. He can hold up the ball. He's not going to give you any flair. He's not going to be a player that
there was some accidental flair in there.
He had
the meg afterwards. You know, take a lucky touch and put it through the wicket.
He's not typically your flair type of player, but I think he really has honed in on the basics with, you know, playing in the Bundesliga, being short, concise, simple, and getting in behind, being a dangerous threat, trying to get in behind. I like what I saw from him. It's encouraging. I would like to see more. That's how I left. When he left the game, I said, that's a decent performance. Now I want to see more.
All right. How about this? What's more, it's hard to sit and get too excited about Martinique.
Yeah.
About a 6-1 run out and try to take too much. We keep looking ahead because that's what the whole thing is. It's about making a run in this Gold Cup that, one, prepares players who are ready for it for World Cup qualifying, but also gets results, because that's part of being ready, is understanding how to get those results. Let's just look ahead to Canada. Mm-hmm. How do you think Greg Berhalter sets up? How does he approach this game? Who are the must starts? How do they win? Because they need to now. To avoid Mexico, unless you want to take on Mexico in a semi, you need to win.
I mean, you have to play them either way. That I'm not going to say you don't want to win, but I throw that out there. It'll be really interesting because this is a Canada team that I think can press the U.S. a little bit, and we've seen some sloppy mistakes from the U.S. or lack of comfort when they've been pressed. And this is a midfield rotation that's going to be completely different than anything else the U.S. has faced. We're talking about Williamson dropping in and getting the ball. We're talking about what Busio did, Leggett. It's completely different when Canada is going to have the ball for a ton of time in that midfield, and you're chasing Eustáquio and Osorio and Kay, who can do things that they haven't seen yet in this competition. Well, not Eustáquio
because he's out.
Yeah, fair. Right. So maybe Piet.
On purpose.
Yeah. Well, if Piet's in the game, you know they're not keeping the ball. Because he struggles with the ball at his feet.
But this is a Canada backline that struggles. And you saw Vitoria kind of chasing at times today. Daniel Henry doesn't look comfortable still. And so for the U.S., I think maybe it's less possession, more direct. And you'd love to see Darryl be the one that's able to kind of pull Vitoria around a little bit. And if he doesn't follow him, then face up and just go after him.
Good stuff, Goss. That's the analysis right there. Because he's right. He's spot on. That is a big weakness.
Charlie just likes when I agree with him.
No, you're right.
I know.
It's hard not to be right. I mean, Vitoria, there are so many times where Canada sort of hangs themselves out to dry. You know what I mean? And they have all these incredible moments. And then it's just a little bit like, oh, brain fart there. And you see, you know, these things can't happen in World Cup qualifying, but they can happen in this Gold Cup. What do you think this is for Canada as opposed to the U.S.? Like, though we talk about the U.S., we keep taking the pressure off. We keep saying, well, it doesn't really matter. We're just trying to find players for World Cup qualifying. For Canada, it might mean something a little different, or it might mean the same thing. What do you think it means?
I think it means something closer to the same thing in kind of a different way. With Canada, obviously, they're still trying. They don't have as much depth as the U.S. does. So they're, you know, Stephen Herdman is definitely looking for answers in that squad. But it's
John Herdman.
I don't know who Stephen Herdman is.
But he sounds like a Canadian national team player.
It does. He's going to have to be a hockey player. He's looking for answers, whether his name is John or Stephen. He's looking for answers in that squad. But part of it with Canada is proving that they belong. Because remember, if this had been the normal hexagonal during the normal time, they would have missed out. With the expansion of the field and then the ability to get a couple extra games in allowed Canada this group to marinate a little bit longer and get into the octagonal or the ocho or whatever the hell we're going to call it, which is good. They deserve it. They're a very talented team. They absolutely deserve to be there. But they still have to prove that the types of failures that we saw from this group in the last Gold Cup when they choked against Haiti, that those are gone. So they need to – it's less about beating the U.S. than it is about doing what they did today and burying Haiti. Or if they get El Salvador in the next round, burying El Salvador. If they get Costa Rica or Honduras, going toe-to-toe with them, giving at least as good as they get. And, hey, if you lose by a goal at the end or something, at least it's a learning experience. But they can't afford the types of catastrophes that have – repeatedly befallen Canada soccer over the past really 20-25 years. And it's about proving that they are beyond that. And they obviously a win against the U.S. would go a long way, but win, lose, or draw against the U.S. this coming weekend, the real work has to be done against the El Salvadors, Costa Ricas, and Honduras. And that, more than anything else, is what they're looking to prove and get proof of concept of in this tournament.
So Doyle, I agree with you in the overarching idea. I actually think this weekend is a huge moment because of the way it's set up, where they can tie or win. And I think this is a moment to show you can manage a game and not play the best soccer, but just you have an opportunity here where whenever Canada's had a situation to not lose, they've lost. Yeah. Right? When they've played halfway on the gas, that's when they've gotten smoked off the field by a Honduras, by a Haiti in those moments. So that's why I think this Sunday is interesting for them in that don't show you could be better than the U.S. Don't show you're the best team in the region. Show that you can handle this one job and this responsibility to get through these 90 minutes and win the group. And I don't think winning the group changes the perception of Canadian soccer, changes the future of Canadian soccer. But because of the way this task is laid out now, I think this is a chance to prove a lot of the things Doyle just talked about.
What's Greg Berhalter have to prove? One job.
One job. One
just
point.
One job.
Charlie, what's Greg Berhalter have to prove in this Canada game? Anything?
He doesn't have to prove a thing. It's the players. He's empowered the players to go out and show that they want to win this Gold Cup. They want to win a trophy. For Canada, they're playing for respect. That's what they're playing for right now. And some of the guys are playing for minutes in World Cup qualifying. And for the Canadian national team, it's all about experience right now because this is foreign to them. They get a chance to make a run in the Gold Cup and then head into World Cup qualifying with a promising group that frankly needs experience and needs to defend because defending is their issue. So now they get to play against the U.S. men's national team. That's a challenge that they're all going to really embrace because they need those type of games to get into a World Cup. And for the U.S. players, again, it's we got to build off of this performance against Martinique. And if we can go out and show that we can take care of Canada, well, there's some guys who continue to perform that are going to get their shot in World Cup qualifying because it's a deep roster. Now we're starting to see players step up. You know, Busio, he's young, but with each performance, he's gaining more confidence. Maybe that move to Europe materializes and that's going to continue to have him accelerate his progress. But a guy like Williamson, which you both touched on, he's different. He offers you something different. And if I'm looking at partnerships, possible partnerships within the U.S. men's national team midfield, you see Tyler Adams, you see Weston McKennie, you know, who would be a good complement to those midfielders, to those players? And it's Eric Williamson because he can, you know, he can fall in behind, he can cover, but he can also beat you on the dribble and give you something a little bit more in the attacking side, the dynamic player that he is. But he's rough. He can mix it up. And I think when you talk about the touches and him, you know, holding on to the ball and playing sometimes a little too relaxed is because the quality of the opponent. Sometimes I think he takes that for granted. And when you're playing against a Mexico and Azteca, you don't have the luxury to try and dribble out of trouble two or three players because then you find yourself down.
He set up Miles Robinson pretty well on that goal, which if they could be at Olympic qualifying, that would have been tight. But, you know,
things happen. Yeah, neither here nor there.
Transported back to my backyard, yelling while I rake leaves. We don't have to go there right now.
One last thing to throw in. We mentioned Acosta stepping in maybe for the third group stage game. I think he's the only player on a yellow card. No one picked up a yellow today. So if he picked up a second yellow, he would be suspended for the knockout round.
There's a good chance, though, whoever the U.S. faces in the knockout round in the quarterfinals will actually be a weaker team than Canada.
Right, but so, weaker is different than win and go home moment, right? So
yeah, fair. No, fair. That's a good point.
But let's go through the lineup. Let's try to predict this. What do you think the shape's going to be, Doyle?
I think we're going to see the 3-4-2-1 again.
Okay, so what's that mean at the left wing back position? Let's say
it's going to be Vines. Like Bello is for a 19-year-old. He was fine. But he repeatedly got into positions where he could have made a difference and is just a little bit gun shy. Whereas Vines, I think, even before he scored the goal this past week in his previous caps, he had been very good about hitting the right pass in stride at the right time. Granted, they were friendlies, but I mean, prove it in friendlies first, and then you prove it in games that matter.
If you're listening live, we are going to talk more Sam Vines. Royal Antwerp rumored to be in for him by The Athletic in the MLS portion of this. So go download the podcast, go watch that part on YouTube. You won't see it in this particular video. Then across the back, I think it's pretty clear. You have Miles Robinson, you have Sands, you have Walker Zimmerman At right back, it's a little bit of a question mark. It's going to be Shaq. It's going to be Reggie. Can Reggie get back? Even if he was ready to be back, would you play him? Or is this just Shaq right of the lineup?
I mean, ideally, you have Shaq Moore for 60 minutes, and then you're able to get Reggie on the field for the final 30 minutes, whatever the score is. If he's healthy, you get him those 30 minutes because it's like at this point, Reggie Cannon has earned that trust. You could throw him in, you could throw him into a must-win game against Canada and be confident that he's going to hit the level.
All right, take us across the central midfield. What do we got? It's Acosta and Williamson, Charlie. What do you think? Where's Greg go?
I would think it's Acosta and Williamson. You go with two players who are physically able to get box to box, who can create, who can defend, who can cover a lot of ground. I think they'd form a good partnership. Jackson Yuhl just got his one chance, hasn't played well, hasn't taken it. So I think his lack of ability to cover ground and defend takes him out of the equation. And then I think Busio is just young. He's just a little too young, still getting his feet wet in the international space. But he has, I think he has been empowered to go out there and try things and be himself. And I think Greg Berhalter has liked that, but still not quite ready for a start against Canada when you're talking about players like Acosta and Williamson.
Dave, the half space merchant, which has now entered the lexicon of modern soccer. I mean, Sebastian Lletget's got to be one of them, I would think.
And I think Hoppy has to be the other one. I don't think he did anything today to lose that spot. And I'd like to see him be given another opportunity to make a difference, had the assist on the opening goal. And I think we all talked about it, just showed a ton of confidence. And Greg's talked about for a week being brave, trying to attack defenses, trying to create opportunities. And you think about this Canada game even more. If Canada steps their lines up, their wing backs go forward. Now you're talking about potentially 3-on-3s in the attack, even 2-on-3s were him. And I hope Daryl Dike could take advantage of the Canadian back line.
So let me ask this. Do you think, and I'm going to reverse it as well, so prepare yourselves. Do you think that in the world where the U.S. beats Canada this weekend, do they do it by taking Canada apart, or do they do it by sort of blowing through them into space?
I think it's the second one.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because Canada is going to come up and it's going to give them the opportunity to just, whether it's Hoppy or DK or Zardes or the wingbacks, somebody's going to be able to get out on the run and get on the ball and take advantage of that.
Well, we haven't seen this U.S. men's national team yet break down somebody. We haven't seen them keep possession, knock the ball around 30 times, you know, have combination against a quality team. We haven't seen that yet. So I do think U.S. is going to capitalize on set pieces. I think Zimmerman's just a beast in the box, especially off corners. So I wouldn't be surprised if he got one eventually because he's getting closer and closer. And then in the transition, we've seen them just be lethal when they are pretty direct. And DK, I think, is going to be a big part of the U.S. getting into the channels. You see when DK, he has this ability to make a run to the channel but still get towards goal and create something. That is something that he has really developed over the past six or 7 months. And I think the fact that he's gone to Europe and has done it, even if it's not the top division, just in the championship, to score goals and continue to show that he's ready for this next challenge and playing in Europe. You gotta ride it out with DK at this moment. You know, Jossie Zardes is 29, and it's a great option to have coming off the bench, especially if you're down a goal or you're even and you need one and you're pushing. Bring him in, the veteran. He's done it today. He showed he's hungry. He'll take care of business, but for Daryl Dike, you're talking about the future. And that's what Greg Berhalter is working towards, building this future with the U.S. men's national team and getting players the opportunity and allowing them to take that opportunity. Daryl Dike has done that. He's proven it game in and game out. Let it ride.
And Doyle, one was, you said, in a world in which the U.S. does win, right? I don't think any of us are saying that's a guarantee. And Charlie's laying out how he thinks it'll happen if the U.S. will win. I don't think that's a guarantee. The other thing on the flip side for Herdman is I think you're a little bit too deep in now to not play at least Tejan at wingback, if not also Richie. and at some point they're going to be up the field, right? Tajon's not going to stay at home that whole game. And so I think there will be opportunities for the U.S. to counter through that. And I think that's the way, if the U.S. is going to win, that it plays out for them.
So then how does Canada win?
Well, no, I was just going to say, I was just going to play devil's advocate. We've seen with this U.S. men's national team as well, they're out of position. They get caught out of position. They get too high. The lines are stretched. There's too much space, not enough communication.
Berhalter said he didn't like some of that tonight. Some of the spacing, some of the second ball.
Right.
The U.S. retention. Was soft. The U.S. was soft as hell in central midfield on second balls tonight. They were soft as hell. The back line against a team as bad as Martinique had to do way more work winning, putting out those fires, and they did a great job of it. It needs to be said. But like I was not thrilled with the work on second balls tonight from the U.S., but continue, sorry.
And that's my point. I think on the counter and on the transition when U.S. is building out of the back, they get into that middle part of the middle third of the field, and they're looking to combine and create something. They've got some wingers high. The outside backs are high. They lose the ball. And I think that moment is when Canada can really hurt the U.S. because
so you think purely in transition, purely off counterattack.
Purely in transition, off the counterattack. You know, a self-inflicted, you know, injury pass. You know, where you a mistake that goes, you know, an errant pass.
I don't know that it's going to be self-inflicted against Canada if they play two forwards and then you have Kay and Osorio pressing. It could be inflicted by Canada. Yeah. Like I agree with you, Charlie. It's going to look like that, but that. How it could look, although I'm not, I don't, the way Tajon's looked in this tournament, there's no reason he can't still beat a guy, whether it's Shaq Moore or Reggie Cannon, and get to that end line and create the same chances he's been creating this whole tournament. So I think there's going to be a ton of chances for Canada in this game. I think the only question mark is, can they protect that back line? And now with Piet probably coming in, they're sort of forced to. And I think that makes them probably a little bit more comfortable against the U.S.
Okay, so now the last thing I want to say here is because Weeby always does this to us. He forces us to give predictions.
Andrew Weeby. It was on the tip of my tongue, too.
Andrew Weeby.
I was like, I'm going to jump in right now.
Tell us what the final score will be this weekend.
Oh, the final score. I think it's going to be a 2-2 draw.
Wow. Canada top
Canada
of the
makes
group.
Mistakes. We know that they do. But Canada has some lethal attackers. Kyle Larin is
he'll give anybody a problem.
My God. Pinpoint, on in the box. He has a nose for where to be, how to shape his body, when it's going to pop out to him. You mentioned Tajon.
Io off the bench.
I love Io, man. You see that run he made as soon as he got on to win that penalty?
Yeah, John Herdman said he was actually mad that he got pulled down. He was like, I wanted him to get the goal, run
but
a play.
But what did Stephen Herdman say?
I don't know. I looked up Stephen Herdman.
It's not a person.
The first hit on LinkedIn was unemployed, so that was not a good start. Yeah, and then I was like, oh,
why'd you
got
to do that? Why'd you have to do that, Stephen Herdman?
Now you're outing Stephen Herdman, who was watching the show.
Well, I'm not telling you the location
night,
here. He's seeking employment. Okay, he's seeking employment. But he may have made this choice on his own. We don't.
Now
know.
You I'm have to two, connect with him.
I know. I'm going to say 2-2. Drop in on birthdays. Just he doesn't even know me. Like, hey, happy birthday, Stephen. Appreciate it. Yeah, 2-2 for me. What do you guys got?
I'm going 2-1 U.S.
Okay.
I just, whatever Weeby says, I just go with him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I just follow your lead.
Jump on the train, man. Jump on the train. We're all here. We're all on
the
2-2 train.
Get it done?
What? My microphone's cutting out.
I'm muted.
I think 2-2. So I think there's a chance where both these coaches actually go in a little scared and close the game down, and neither of them try and open up, and it's tepid and boring, and it's 1-1, and it's a set piece goal, and then
I hope you're just trying to rush
at the end. No, I think there's a really good chance that happens, just based off some of what we've seen. I also think the other side is both coaches go in to win it and open up, and these back lines both struggle, and then you're looking at 2-2 or 3-2. So I think it could go either way there.
I'm not letting you off, Doyle. Not after you reversed it on me. Wow.
Darrell's going to go to sleep with this prediction.
Wow. All right. Some other news and notes from the tournament, please. At Matt Doyle 76, hashtag coward, if you would like. El Salvador through to the quarterfinals. So that's big for them. All the way through. Hugo Perez is the manager there. You know him well from his many days with the U.S. national team. Rogelio Funes Mori, brace. You score goals, it gets better, huh, Mexico? That's the way it works.
Mexico.
FC Dallas Academy.
Sueño. Yeah.
This Mexico team is passing themselves out of chances I've never seen before. They are in the six on open goals, and they're like laying the ball back off. It's really surprising to see. So it's interesting to watch this continue along now. Also, if you watch in Spanish, you also get to watch people go on their first dates. So it's like The Bachelor and Gold Cup combined at as
well. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Those Gold Cup first dates, those are Extra Time listeners. I know it. I just know it. All right. That's it from us here on the live show. If you're listening on podcast, we're going to keep going. We got Joseph Martinez to talk about a bunch of transfer rumors around MLS, our all-star ballots that we'll set up for you as well. If you're listening or watching live on YouTube, that's it for us. We'll be here after every single U.S. men's national team match of the Gold Cup and in World Cup qualifying immediately afterwards on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app. Thanks for listening now. And if you're still listening, stay tuned. Joseph Martinez and the All-Star rosters are next. Thanks for sticking with us. We've got the 2021 MLS All-Star Game presented by Target coming up. You only have about 6 days left to cast your ballot. 11 players this time. Left backs, right backs, and defensive midfielders get their due. We've got a little beef in Atlanta. Joseph Martinez and Gabriel Heinze, what's going on? Joseph's healthy. He's not in training. Gabby says, this is the way it is. It's my decision. It's going to stay that way until I don't know what else changes. We'll find that out, or we won't, or Joseph will get back. And, of course, we've got some more transfer rumors to run down here. A bunch of homegrown Sam Vines rumored. You've got some rumors surrounding Kevin Paredes of D.C., Moses Nyman of D.C. as well, and that Tanner Tessman deal. To Venezia got done. $4 million.
Can I just throw something out there?
Sure.
I don't think Gabriel Heinze listens to ETR. Because if you followed MLS and watched what happened in Toronto, I don't think your inclination would be to push Joseph Martinez, who is probably more central than Josie is, out of your team right now. I'm just throwing that out there. So,
all right, well, we're going to save the All-Star ballot for 1 second here. Joseph Martinez, I expect, won't be on any of ours. And let's just dive right into this situation in Atlanta, because that is the juiciest thing that came out of MLS today, and in a long time, I think, actually. Joseph Martinez's absence from the team, according to Felipe Cardenas of The Athletic, is a coach's decision. That's according to the coach. Gabriel Heinze said, this is my decision. It's not fitness-related. Martinez, he's been training on his own for more than a week, despite being medically cleared to play. That's what sources tell Felipe. Here's the quote from Gabi. He doesn't have any kind of fitness problem. It's my decision that he train away from the team. He'll continue to train on his own. Asked if it was disciplinary, Heinze said, I have my reasons, and I'm very clear on those reasons. So, my way or the highway, Joseph Martinez, the face of your club, a club that has hit, let's just say, rougher times than they first experienced, are trying to find some equilibrium, are trying to find some leadership, certainly in the managerial ranks and maybe even beyond, alienate their MVP candidate, best player, talismanic goal scorer,
face of their franchise,
giver of all things good, universally loved by their fan base,
and
by MLS fan base.
MLS fan base never had an issue with either of the previous coaches, even when everybody else was,
publicly. Now he was. Remember, he was running out of trainings and stuff.
Maybe
and he was
beating everybody
Joseph.
Else was quitting on Frank DeBoer. Everybody else was quitting on Frank DeBoer. Joseph scored in 17 straight games. He scored in 17 straight games.
Oh, man, I forgot about – that's like a different lifetime, man.
Like, I know he won MVP in 2018. He was actually more valuable to that team in 2019.
So help me understand. Help Atlanta fans understand. Help us all understand. We're all trying to figure this out, basically. It happened today, this Thursday, July 15th. To me, this puts a ton of pressure – self-inflicted on Heinze and the players, because they're missing so many guys. It's not just Joseph. You look on this Gold Cup roster, I mean, Bello, Miles Robinson, Breguzan, three starters right there.
Emerson Hyman's out for the year.
Yeah, Mo Barco's Adams just with Argentina.
Yeah, Mo Adams just went out for 3 months, I think.
Yeah.
As well. And Franco Ibarra and Santiago Sosa are both injured as well. That's your entire midfield. So they traded for Amar Sadic, which... okay, that's a good MLS trade, but like they are 19 players down. It's a perfect time to push Joseph Martinez out of the squad. Why not? I'm just saying, I saw this movie in Toronto, and it does not end well for the guy who had the same job as Gabriel Heinze.
That is true. Take us into the politics here, Charlie. Strikers and managers. Stubborn people put together.
This is a battle of egos, is what it comes down to. And for a new coach, typically you'll do anything and almost everything to make sure that your star player, your striker, is going to be on your side. You need him. You need him for your job, for your safety of your job. Plus, he's the best player on your team. You want to empower him. He's coming back from an injury. You want to give him every opportunity to get fit. And obviously, it comes down to, I did this in my career. This is who I am. This is who I am as a coach. And my word is more important than your word. And you're going to listen to what I do or what I tell you to do. And if you don't, then I got to make an example of you. That can go one of two ways. That works. He says, "All right, I got to snap into a rhythm and try and get to my best, and I'm going to work hard for you and be the best teammate I can be." Or, "Nah, I'm good. Then you do you, I'll do me, and we'll see who the club chooses." And I think at this point, he's going to put it all on Atlanta United in their front office to say, which direction are you going to go in?
Front office said, "We don't make comments on coaches' decisions."
Yeah, no. you can say that now, but we'll see about that. And if Joseph Martinez says, "Yeah, I'll wait until you make your decision," is it him or me?
But to Doyle's point about Joseph is, he's not a player that's had problems in the past. He's a player who's normally given everything he can. He obviously wants the game to kind of feed to him. It's been successful for the club. Maybe it's not always the right thing if you're a coach looking at your style, but he's not a player who quits on, you know, managers or quits on the game or doesn't give his all. So it's odd to see the moment in which maybe you are not at your best as a team with him on the field because he hasn't come back from the injury. But that doesn't mean he's training on his own, right? Like, this is another step that I can't really understand externally how this comes about and how does this end?
That's important to say, I think, that we don't know. It could be something on the inside.
Wait, where you weren't at training today? I thought you trained.
No, I wasn't. The rest of the team, maybe the rest of the team, I don't know. Maybe the rest of the team saying this is justified. Maybe Joseph Martinez isn't coming back from Copa America and he had a quarantine for a couple weeks. Maybe he was just wildly out of shape, but that doesn't seem likely either because he just got back from a major tournament and he's recovering from injury. You wouldn't think that he would slam on the brakes like that.
If he is completely out of shape and he's 20 pounds overweight, you don't banish him.
Yeah.
That's the last thing you do.
That's the part you should.
Right.
You, and if anything, you motivate him, you get him more involved. You're like, you're on him, but you're encouraging him and in a supportive way. And this is the thing that I can't stand seeing when coaches don't, when coaches alienate players and they don't meet in the middle. There's always no player wants to sit and watch. There's no player that wants to do that. There's not a single player in history that would rather sit on the bench or be excommunicated from their team than participate. Now, does every player want to start and play 90 minutes? Yes, but that's not possible. You can't make everyone happy, but you can get them to buy in and feel a part of it. And that comes from communication. And so when a player like Jozy Altidore is kicked out of the team and there's a reason for it, now other players on the roster may say, maybe Jozy was a little right there. Maybe there was a way that it could have been handled differently to still keep Jozy involved, but, you know, make an example. And maybe it comes down to the player saying, "I apologize, I could have done something differently." And then Chris saying, "Hey, we all move in, we're doing this together, we move forward." So I think it's the tough part for coaches is being able to get everybody to work towards the same goal. And the coaches who can communicate and are verbal and make you feel like you're part of something, even if you're not playing, those are the special ones. When you watch a Jurgen Klopp, he's going to give hugs to players who aren't playing. who won't even touch the field. And those players are just as happy to give him a hug. And you know why? Because he makes them still feel part of the team. And there's communication and there's respect. Soon as you lose respect because you treated someone wrong or poorly, or you said the wrong things and you weren't a man of your word, or you didn't basically tell the whole team, hey, I made a mistake. We're all humans. You know, that happens. Let's move forward. If those coaches can't do that, that's when you see the wheels fall off, because you disrespect the player, then it spreads. Oh, he's not treating players. Oh, let's disrespect him. And then it just goes back and forth and it gets ugly. I've seen it a million times. So I'm not saying that happened, but for Joseph Martinez to be excommunicated, something happened internally. It hasn't gone well. And as a new coach coming into that locker room, not really knowing or caring what has been done in the past and kind of trying to set a new standard, that's when things can get ugly.
Wrap it up for us here. Like, now what?
I think just based off everything Charlie's saying, coming from inside a locker room, that's the scary part. It's like, this could be nothing, right? Next week, Joseph could start. The team could start playing well. He scores 10 goals to close out the season. They get a decent playoff run. And in a year and a half, we make a bit about, oh, remember when Gabriel Heinze kicked Joseph out of the team? This could also be the demarcation point of what Gabriel Heinze's time in Atlanta is. Like, that's how big a gamble this is. If you are pushing out the face of a successful franchise, an MVP in this league in his prime, and the guy who everything has been built around. Like, this isn't Eric Hurtado. I don't know why that was the first name that came up. He just got traded. You know,
you just put him on an island.
He's not even around. This isn't Kai Kamara. This isn't Sasha Kljestan. Like, this is one of the faces of this league. And it's a huge gamble from Gabriel Heinze. And just listening to Charlie talk about it, I don't know how this ends.
And this is another thing I might add. If Heinze came in and was blowing teams out of the water, they were performing super well. He's already got the team playing well. There's no questions. Like, he's the man for the job. Everyone's excited. And then this happens. Then fans, because, you know, Joseph Martinez is coming back from an ACL. There's always questions like, can a player rediscover their form after such a traumatic injury? And maybe they'd say, we'll give Gabriel Heinze the benefit of the doubt just because the team's playing so well. But they're not playing anywhere near well. They're playing horrible if you want to compare them to the Atlanta United of the past, the glory days of Atlanta United, when everyone was so frightened to play Atlanta. You were scared. You were shaking your pants because you knew when you played them at the Benz, they were going to put 3-4 on you. And it was you. There's nothing you could do. You were just, all right, we're going to take an L here. You know, that's not the case now. Everyone wants a piece of Atlanta because you know you can go and get a result. So that's the big problem is he hasn't proven anything. Nothing. And no one stepped up. And the team is a shell of themselves. So when that you add this, I mean, if you're an Atlanta United supporter, you tell me how you're feeling. Tell me how you're feeling, because, you know, you're always going to side with the guy that's proven and has done it and has won a trophy for your club versus a coach who's unproven, who was just signed. You've already had a coach come in with a big reputation, not go well. I feel
like we've already done this.
Yeah.
Sort of in Atlanta, right? Like, this is it's a little bit of deja vu here. Just perhaps even more explicit and more targeted toward the best player on your team.
You know, it makes me think of the great long form piece that Felipe did for The Athletic on Atlanta and how they dismantled that team after Tata left and sort of gave De Boer a lot of what he wanted, maybe at the expense of the culture that they had been built under Tata, and how that sort of picked up steam as the year went on. And like, I thought that was going to be it. I thought that was going to be the frustration and the rock bottom right there. But hey, Joseph's back. They have some exciting young players. And, you know, I like Sosa a lot. And Brooks Lennon and George Bello have both been very good at the fullback position, wing back positions, and, you know, Miles Robinson, and like, okay, it's going to work out, but it's actually gotten worse in the month and a half since that piece came out. And it feels like Felipe is going to have another long form to write on this one, because this is Joseph Martinez, man. This is Joseph Martinez. He's a diva in the way that strikers are divas, sure. But he's also backed it up more than any goal scorer in this league's history. So if you're going to banish him, you better be real sure that you're correct in doing so. Otherwise, there's going to be a price to pay for everybody in that organization.
So I have my reasons, and I'm very clear on those reasons. That's Gabriel Heinze. He seems pretty clear. He's not leaving a lot of middle ground there. He's saying it's my way or it's the highway. We've got something to resolve. This is where I stand. We'll see if that gets resolved. Atlanta fans, hit us up. Let us know what you think. I was going to write before this weekend about this game, Atlanta hosting New England on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, all about Carlos Hill, because he's having a ridiculously dominant season. Like, he's doubling up everybody, literally doubling up the next comer on chance creation numbers across the board. But this is the story that's going to reverberate for a long time, it feels like, with a club that's used to be in the headlines, and of late, those headlines haven't been so positive. So we'll see what happens here.
Can I just say, for the Revs, the two things I think about with the Revs in Atlanta are they got the red card and lost, what, 7-0?
Oh, 7-1. Yeah, that one was... Yeah,
that was ugly.
And then the other was...
Game, right?
I think so. And then the other was the one time Atlanta hosted the All-Star game, Wilfred Captoom was the, not Wilfred Captoom, sorry, Wilfred Zahiba was the one all-star commissioner pick. And just because we're not going to talk about that.
He wasn't a commissioner
pick. No, it was Tata's pick.
Tata loved him.
Oh. So whatever it was, Zahiba. To go from that to where the Revs are now is astounding, and also shows you how quickly you can shift in Major League Soccer when you have the right guidance and the right ideas.
All right, speaking of Carlos Hill, let's build our extra time. 2021 MLS All-Star presented by Target ballot here. We got 11 names to put down.
Is Hebo going
to
make it?
I don't know, man. I don't know. We don't. Is Tata
is he
here?
On Houston's book still or no?
Yeah, let's give Tata a call.
No,
here.
I don't think so.
Tata's a Funes Mori miss away from being an MLS coach again.
All right, goal. Who are we putting in goal? I have Brad Stuver in goal. That's my vote. Yeah, that's my vote for goal. I wrote today that 20% I trust my eyes on goalkeeper, 80% I trust the advanced stats, and the advanced stats really like Brad Stuver, and every time I watch him, he makes big game-saving saves. So I have him in there, and thinking, believing that Matt Turner would get in, mm-hmm. that Andre Blake would get in, that maybe Jonathan Bond could get in. He's had a good season as well. Or Pedro Gallese, if they're just looking for that Pulpo flair, let's just say.
Yeah, did a list. We've been just all the best goalkeepers.
Oh, my God.
League.
Now I'm out. I'm tapping out right now. I'm tapping out. Brad Stuver.
We have an email from a fan who says Jimmy Maurer should get votes.
Jimmy Maurer last year was excellent. This year he hasn't been as good.
I think also he's been hurt, which then is part of the Brad Stuver thing is Gallese's been at Copa America. Turner's now missed a little with Gold Cup. So that's the only reason I agree with you, because he's been available and been good.
Okay, fine. That's three. I'll take that. Left back. Who's your left back? I struggled with this.
I gave it to Hollingshead, even though he hasn't played as much left back this year, but he's been so good for so long and has gotten zero credit. But there's only one left back in the league who underlaps, gets into the half spaces where like the number 10 operates, and then like plays his forwards or his wingers into the box, like hitting inch perfect passes, and that's Hollingshead. He absolutely deserves it.
I picked Duan Jones.
You think Hollingshead with that goals against average for FC Dallas?
I mean, he's more of an attacker than a defender for that team. Like if you look at those goals they're giving up, it's the center backs doing Benny Hill stuff, just tripping over each other. It's just comedy. They look like the Fire. They look like the Chicago Fire week after week.
That's low.
Don't do that.
Look, I'm okay with Hollingshead there. I also had Jones on my short list, Dave. I ended up going with Lovitz, but I feel like it's like Lovitz left back and right back are pretty much open competitions.
Brad Smith is a good shout. Brad Smith is really good.
I was going to say, just give Seattle.
Just give them the right.
I say we limit ourselves to three sounders for this ballot. Who we choose in a left back? I like the DeJuan Jones shout. Charlie, I'm going to give you the final choice here. Who's our left back? Viafania could be in here. Lovitz could be in here.
Mm-mm.
Charlie, you got to pick someone at some point.
I know. I'm going to go with DeJuan Jones as well.
All right, DeJuan Jones is our left back. At center back.
Charlie went with the Rev.
Yeah, I was like, how long is that going to take? We know you're going with DeJuan Jones.
The filibuster to go with the Rev? Come on, Charlie. What are you doing, man? Center backs. Dave, you get one. Doyle, you get one. Pick them.
Antonio Carlos is on my MVP shortlist, so that's an easy one.
Okay, sure. I had to.
I mean, he's injured right now, so put otherwise okay, I would have him in there.
The All-Star game is happening in a month and a half.
If neither of you say Yaimar, I think you...
I'm not going to say Yaimar. I'm going to say Jack Elliott.
Make the case.
He's just been awesome. He stepped in and like he's played better this year than Mark McKenzie did last year, and Mark McKenzie was best 11. And it's not just his presence on set pieces and his defensive work. If you look at what he does in terms of passing the ball and moving the game around, one of the very best in the league.
I'm going Andreu Fontas. It's finally come good, baby. They signed a best 11 center back, and it took like 2.5 years for him to come around. But Casey's got the best goal differential. He's the best and most voluminous passer in the entire league. I mean, that's any position. Like, their possession game runs through him and through Ilya Sanchez in the middle as well. They build out from those center backs, and that's where everything comes from. And he's actually been really good defensively. There were some big question marks about him in the open field for 2.5 years. He is now making those plays. And stopping counterattacks, of which Kansas City give up.
Anders is just throwing a fit.
Listen, and I'm not – Charlie, are you picking Yaimar?
You want to use one of your three Sounders picks there? Because you have to have Rui Diaz and you have to have Jao Paulo.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I'm just saying both players have been phenomenal for the Sounders and in Major League Soccer. So
I vote with whichever Sounder Charlie picks because I'm not voting for Fontas. I'm fine with Jack Elliott, but I'm not voting for Fontas.
Well, I'm picking Alex Rodon at right back. How about that?
That's who I have at right back. Anybody else going to disagree?
I had him Baizo, so I just swapped my Philly for Seattle guy. Yeah, I think the responsibility at right back is harder than right wing back, so that was part of it for him. And then I also think he's what he did in Champions League on top of what he's done in Major League Soccer. Puts him above Roldan for me.
Araujo would be the other one in here. I think that would have a good shout. By the way, he signed a contract extension, and so did Efra.
Yeah.
So there's some news for Galaxy fans. We're taking Roldan. Jao Paulo's our defensive midfielder. Done. Dusted.
Wait, is that done and dusted?
Who else would it be?
I have Alex Ring.
Think it's Jao Paulo.
If you look at Austin,
I would take Jao Paulo too.
With and without Alex Ring, he has an argument for like most valuable player in the
This league. Is not an MVP vote. This is an All-Star game vote. Fine.
But also like with him, they're like mid-table.
Ooh, whoa, unnecessary, Weeby.
I'm just saying.
That doesn't make Alex Ring. Right.
There's no Nico Lodero and Jao Paulo just took over.
Alex,
the Sounders.
If you put Alex Ring on that Sounders team, the Sounders would be better.
Over
Jao Paulo.
Or if you put Rui Diaz on Austin would be better too.
For sure. Yeah. But we're not, I mean, obviously Rui Diaz is better than any number nine on.
I was making my point in favor of you, Doyle.
Yeah, okay, cool.
we got
some real 1:15 a.m.
It literally is 1:15 a.m. All right, we'll finish it off here. Attacking midfielders, Carly Seal. I have Krylock. Who else would be in that? Roldan.
Krylock's a good show.
Yeah, Krylock is a good one. I think Roldan's a good one. And my other one was Montero. So I'm happy with any of those three as the other one alongside Heal, who obviously has to be there.
I had Roldan just because I don't think the 3-5-2 would have worked without him doing the really under the radar stuff he's done. That said, Krylock, I mean, he's putting up some numbers, man. He's so good.
He's putting up numbers, and I have entertainment value number two after production and consistency and quality in MLS, and he gives you that in spades. Up top, I think it's pretty easy. Chicharito, Rui Diaz, and Shalawi. You could throw in Nani. Anybody going to do it?
I did. It's a 4-3-3, right? So you take two wingers and one center forward. So it's either Chicharito or Rui Diaz. It's not both of them.
Who would you take out of the one?
Chicharito. Rui Diaz.
Chicharito. Chicharito's been better and more valuable for his team.
I disagree. I wholeheartedly disagree. Okay. Like, Rui Diaz puts, as good as Seattle have been, puts them on his back. My man holds up the ball. He's just a constant threat. He gives you much more than Chicharito does. Chicharito is great in the box, but Rui Diaz is more dynamic. He's more important to Seattle than I think Chicharito is for the Galaxy.
All right, there's our 11. Anders slapped that thing out on Twitter.
We just said 17 players and then moved on. Yeah, well,
but, you know, he will sort through that.
And like nine of them are goalkeepers because Weeby listed the whole
league. Anders, I want to apologize to you, Anders, because these guys were just straight slandering the Sounders. Just straight disrespecting the Sounders.
I put three Seattle players on my team.
I'm sending you the definition of slander after this, Charlie. That's not accurate at all.
By the way, I picked Rui Diaz and Chicharito because I don't care.
You're going to play 4-4-2 in the
All-Star. I don't know. Who the hell knows what's going to happen in the All-Star game?
Bob Bradley's going to fix this problem.
Graham Soucy's probably going to get into the All-Star game. Who knows?
Bob Bradley, the commissioner.
Does Carlos Vela start?
Yeah, probably.
The front line is going to be Vela, Joseph, and Chicharito somehow.
No. Jonah Dos Santos is going to start at that on that front line. It's against the League MX All-Stars. Come on.
All right, let's finish with this one. There's a bunch of homegrown transfer rumors out there. The first one's not a rumor. Tanner Sessman is going to Serie A. Venezia, $4 million for a player that I think played 29 times for FC Dallas. That's some good business for Dallas. And Tanner Sessman is a 19-year-old that's going to Venice to play as soon as they get it up to snuff in a matchbox of a stadium on the canals. I mean, they got the video of him out, like, riding in the – it's not a yacht, but it feels like what a yacht on the canals would look like. Like, we need to get this man a stylist and really up his game.
Yeah, he was wearing the
fanny pack. That'll come. That'll come. That happens for all Americans that make that
trip. That comes? Yeah. I was going to say, he's a little too frisco for me right
Charlie's
now.
Charlie's been in there.
I went over like I was in Nelly's St. Lunatics. They changed my style real quick. I was going in jerseys. I had like all these football jerseys, and I remember the captain said, "It's enough. We're going to the mall." And he took me to the mall, and I tried on my first pair of skinny jeans, and I was like traumatized because I was like, "I can't do it."
It's like the shopping montage from Pretty Woman.
Yeah, it's crazy, stupid love.
The Charlie of those days did not fit into skinny jeans. It's just too thick for that.
But I did.
You found a way, huh?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I'm saying get him a stylist. Get him up to snuff on the Italian language. Get him in the box at a Clemson game. He's going to be – if he can get to the national team and start in Serie A, we got People Magazine written all over it. We got a mainstream breakout star, baby. You already see the headlines. It's like FC Dallas player, godson of Dabo Sweeney, goes to Serie A. Put some respect on the Tessman name. Two N's at the end.
Former North Texas SC teammates Brian Reynolds and Tanner Tessman may match up in Serie A.
There's the extra time sell.
Boom.
What do we think of this move for Tanner Tessman?
Boom.
And maybe Gianni Cabuccio as well. Because now the rumors are linking him as well. Boy, you got some good late 90s.
Yeah, so I would say in general, you always look at what's the fit, what's the opportunity. You know, how do these players fit in? But I think there is this level at this point of get to Europe. Like, if you get there, people then respect you in a different way. And if you, for example, Matt Miazga, if you come in at the wrong level, you could still fall down to the right level once you're there. And so there's no, like, negative move for a lot of these guys, especially with how strong MLS is now in terms of bringing guys back. We saw Indian Vasilev, right, Indiana is going back to Inter Miami. Like, there's opportunity then if it doesn't hit right, but you're going into a club where you're probably going to get playing time because they don't have a huge opportunity to sign a bunch of players, and they're not really a Serie A team. So you'll get chances, you'll play, you'll be seen, and what else can you ask for as a young player?
$4 million for FC Dallas. Seems like a pretty good bit of business for them, for a guy that hasn't even been playing for Lucci recently. Maybe in preparation for this deal. But yeah, that'll work for you. Here's Greg Berhalter's quote on all the moves, because Sam Vines is rumored to go to Belgium as well, and there's a bunch of other ones. Quote from Greg, "It seems like from my experience in Europe, my experience in MLS, that we've gotten to a point where there's a critical mass. And what I mean by that is we've had enough American players that have been successful overseas in Europe that now clubs are looking at the United States as a market. They're focusing on our young players to bring them in, develop them, or continue their development, and then potentially resell them. I think that's a good point that we're at right now. Doyle, what do you think of that quote? What do you think of the place that we're at? Because it just feels, I don't know if exponential is the right word, but every window feels like another big step forward. And the time between those windows sort of cement that as guys like Brendan Aaronson or Mark McKenzie or others perform once they arrive.
Yeah, the time between those windows, it feels non-existent. And I think a lot of that is just, I mean, time has been weird since the pandemic started 16 months ago. So it's hard. Like, it feels like one long season slash one long transfer window. But, you know, the quotes ring true. We've thought about this for a long time. Like, could MLS be the type of league that creates a ton of high level players who you know, get interest from Serie A and Bundesliga sides, or from, you know, Champions League teams in Belgium or Portugal? And that moment is here. It didn't quite sneak up, because I think we all maybe saw it coming a couple years ago with the way the youth teams were playing by about 2017, 2018. It felt like this moment was coming, but now that it's here, it's almost overwhelming. It's almost hard to keep track of, because in the past, it's like if an American player was getting bought by a Serie A team, that guy was the star, and you watched every single thing that he was going to do. And now it's like, well, he didn't even start for our U23s. Well, he should have, but like, he didn't start for our U23s. He's not a definite lock to get into camps. It feels like a page has been turned or a corner has been turned, and it's good for the league because, well, first of all, it's obviously a revenue stream, but it also, like, being part of it's a global game, and being part of the business of the global game in that way is like, it brings you a level of credibility in the eyes of potential fans that nothing else would. So it's good for the league for those very obvious reasons.
And I mean, I'm someone who's watched this league heavily, value this league heavily, but watching players be so ready when they get to Europe to hit the ground running has changed my perception of the league over the last 18 months. And then you see the value, and there's value, you know, these players. Then I think Brendan Aaronson, phenomenal in MLS, has improved. Just being in Europe, I think the challenge, the living in a new place, all those things make, if a player takes it on, make a player better. But like, the perception of this league is changing because these guys get there and they're ready to roll and they're competitive and they're game changers. And you look at Tyler Adams starting in the biggest games for RB Leipzig right off the bat. It wasn't, oh, and you know, he'll go into the U17s and then when he's ready, he'll get there. Like, that's not the reality anymore. So these young guys, it's awesome. You hear the CFG rumors around Moises Naingman and Kevin Paredes.
Yep.
You know, okay, that's a little bit different. But still, these guys are not being signed by Venezia to sit on the bench or be loaned out or go into their youth team. They're being signed to affect the game now and have sell-on value going forward.
I mean, that's what encourages me, is that there's teams sniffing around from Belgium, from Austria, whatever it might be, that are saying, oh, okay, this is the emerging market. Like, let's jump on it. You know, just the same way that MLS teams jump on emerging markets as well, and all of a sudden you start to see influxes. If there's a couple successful guys, well, boom. You know, Joseph Martinez didn't hit, watch out. Venezuela's the next thing. You know, the United States, Canada, these players are becoming the next thing. And if you can get them before they're established in the national team, Tanner Tessman isn't. Sam Vines maybe going to Royal Antwerp. That's the rumor right now, or the report. Can't remember who said that at The Athletic, but we'll define it accordingly. For $2 million, it report, just starts to build on itself. It's a report.
Sam's okay. On vacation, so everything's a report. Okay, right,
perfect,
now.
Perfect. Haven't heard from Sam in a while, so just wanted to make sure. But yeah, there's a level of just sort of one-upsmanship. And as they succeed, on you go. And as they get sold on to the next one, on you go once again. It's super encouraging, and really happy to be able to watch these guys on a weekly basis to see the next one emerge. Let's get some mail and get out of here, man, because it is late night, brown liquor, ETR, just at its finest. 401-200 MLS. Charlie's tired. He's got red wine.
So we've been getting some emails lately. Then we got questioning emails. So this is to clear everything up. You know, the difference between Weeby and the Andrew from KC is that the Andrew from KC will actually be at the Gold Cup games at Children's Mercy Park tonight, and Weeby from KC will not. And that's from Drew from the Northland, in parentheses, formerly Andrew from KC.
Gotcha. That was a good definition. Thank you, Drew from the Northland, for clearing all that up. I have never once put in a fraudulent email into the show, and I never will. I want to make that I never will. I can't say if I have ever done that in the past. Anything else? Or are we getting out of here?
You want to go a little USA for a second?
Yeah, real quick.
Okay. Jimmy K. Green in Greensboro, and this is for you, Evie, because this is your favorite thing in the world, says, question for ETR. Shouldn't we stop pretending we're trying to equal Mexico and just accept our role as a part-time regional power since we didn't take Olympic qualifying seriously and now Gold Cup as well by not fielding our best sides? Here's your chance, Evie. Here's your chance. It's all about Olympic.
We are just a regional power, aren't we? Like,
he said part-time. We can't be the regional power if we don't take all this.
Nah, get out of here with that. No, come on. Get out of here with that. We are there. We're making the progress there. But I think that's the goal, right? That's what Greg Berhalter and this class of players is here to do, is to stop being just a regional power, to have the ability, the potential, the possibility to go into a bigger tournament and do something more. Like, that's the next step. It hasn't been taken. You could argue maybe it almost at 2002. Almost. A couple breaks go a different way, maybe. But that's it from us. Thank you guys for enduring. You can go on YouTube. If you're listening to the podcast, on YouTube we have separate videos here for the U.S. national team reaction to that win against Martinique as well. We'll be back to do the Twitter spaces ahead of Canada, and then we'll react live afterwards on MLS channels. And we'll do that throughout the knockout rounds as well, and then into World Cup qualifying. We're going to start putting out two podcasts, and boy, if this test case was any indication, we got to do normal recording times for Major League Soccer-focused podcasts. So we'll start doing that next week, everybody. So you'll get a podcast on Sunday after Canada and one on Monday reviewing the MLS weekend. Enjoy it. We'll see you then.